Yeah, I've been working in Bing for a while, worked on a lot of different areas, availability, performance, and just service hardening in general. When I was talking about debugging, we spent probably the last half an hour or 45 minutes trying to debug why the sound doesn't work on the laptop. So we tried three different laptops. The hum kept coming in. I was just thinking, man, if only we had some logs which can tell us where the fault is from. Can we just point out where exactly the problem is and trying to resolve it? In the end, we weren't able to resolve it completely, but we were able to mitigate it, which meant that instead of being 100% right, we have a degraded experience for the user, which is still better than having a terrible experience. So the speaker thing worked out fine, so let me go with my talk. Before I start the whole talk, I just want to give a context of when I talk about debugging, there's lots of different types of debugging you could do. The ones where the focus today for me is when something really goes wrong in production. Not something that's a super high severity incident, something that's a zero or one, something that's a low severity issue that you want to debug, that's what I want to focus on. This is a chart I picked up from one of our internal documents. It's probably an 8-year-old document. There's a bunch of problems. One, it says SLA here. It's actually not SLA. And then when we say DRI, what I mean by is designated responsible individual, the person on call is what I talk about. If you're interested in, you know, good definition of SLA, SLO, and SLI, Liz and Seth did a video from the Google Cloud Platform. I have a link for the YouTube video. I recommend watching it. I actually ran into it while I was looking up the definitions to fix it. So instead of updating my slide, I thought I'll point out the problems and have you watch the video. So that's the link to the video. So in this case, the debugging in terms of, you know, clearly we want auto mitigation to work, right? We don't want humans to be able to want to tinker around things and fix problems. But it works majority of the cases. Invariably, you're going to run into problems where the auto mitigation doesn't work. You have to do something. Somebody has to take an action. In terms of the timeline, we talk about, you know, the time to detect is from the time the incident started to when we actually figured out. And then the debugging really starts after that. You know, to be able to find the right person you want to be on call, if the alert is properly configured, it goes to the right person or the right team. If not, it goes through one or two hops. That's where the debugging also comes into play. And the time to fix or the hot fix is the time where debugging can be super critical in reducing the time. This is where things are usually under high pressure. People have to figure out what things are going on as the clock is usually ticking and some customers or the users are impacted. So that's why the reliability of the debugging tools and the things become more important. Before I talk about the talk, does this image look familiar to folks? You're familiar with what this is? Raise of hands, people who know. Okay, some people know. That's good. And then how many of you have heard of Admiral Grace Hopper? That's good. I'd love to have a lot more people know about her. She's one of my idols, I would say. Look up online about Admiral Grace Hopper. She has done so much for the computer industry. So this image is from, it's actually a good Wikipedia article about this particular image itself. This is when they were working on the Mark II computer. There's actually a physical bug. The image here is a moth, and that moth was stuck in one of the relays, which caused the computer to malfunction. I mean, in today's world, when we talk about bugs, we're talking about, you know, millions of lines of codes and across lots of machines. In this case, it was actually a bug that caused things to work, things to not work. There are various versions of the story as to where the term bug came from, whether it's Thomas Edison or whether it's Grace Hopper, but that's not what my focus is. The thing, a couple of things I want to point out in this log. So this particular log is actually in a museum in Washington, D.C. If you're ever in D.C., you can actually go look at this. One thing that was very interesting for me was the timeline here. Typically, as we do incidents, we go through and log as to what was the start time of the incident, when did we find the issue, how long did it take to debug the issue or find the bug and then resolve it. Given that this is a long time ago, decades ago, the timeline here is impressive. You know, if only we have incidents where you can just do in a few hours, even that's actually very impressive given the time at which this particular issue was there. So that's something I thought was a tidbit. But I definitely recommend looking up Admiral Grace Hopper, and then you'll be able to find the story as well. As I mentioned earlier, you know, when we talk about debugging, the focus for me today is once the product hits the production. This is when the pressure is slightly higher. You're not at the luxury of, you haven't launched yet, you can take your own sweet time in debugging. But we know debugging is hard, right? Let's put this XKCD comic so I can grab some water while you read. So in general, what happens is, you know, by nature, a lot of us are explorers, right? Once you find a problem, it's easy to keep looking into something that's related and keep getting distracted. But during an incident, we really need to think differently. Think almost like these doctors and operators in the emergency room. Try to stop the bleeding and move on. The exploration is great while you're developing the feature or in steady state, but not of these critical players. But debugging in general is hard. It's not easy. But there are some things we could do to make it easier. I'm going to talk about a few concepts. It's not an exhaustive list. Try to use some of them. The first one when I go through this is really if you want to make the error messages useful. It's just not useful for the users, also for engineers. What I mean by that is take a look at this error message, right? It's common. I've seen this in plenty of websites. I see that even today, they just say 500. If you're not a techie, you don't know what that means, whether you won $500 or something in a website. You don't know what that is for, right? This really doesn't say much, that something went wrong. But if you take a screenshot and send it to the company that built the site, they wouldn't know what went wrong. Slightly better approach is where you add additional information. The one on the left side is from Bing, our own product. When we actually have an outage, something goes wrong with the request, it's a 500 level error. We actually, first of all, say it's us, it's not the user. And then we have an ID there, a token, which is like a GUID plus few other debug information. So if we ever get a screenshot or a message like this, we can easily figure out what exactly went wrong. We can trace through our logs and look at it. The one on the right side is from one of my favorite products. That's a YouTube error message. They also have a nice fancy link where you can go look at all the error information that the developers can do in debug. Incidentally, we use a panda. Google, or in this case, YouTube uses a monkey. Amazon, if you haven't seen an error message, they use a dog. So it looks like the animal planet is completely covered in all our error messages. Especially in our case, the panda page, the story behind that is that when a few years ago, we came up with this whole concept of LifeSite first culture within the organization. LifeSite is production for those of you who are not familiar with that. What that means is the product or the features that we have in production is a lot more important than anything else that anybody in the organization is working on. That means that if there's a problem in production, you're supposed to drop things and prioritize on fixing what's already in production. That's kind of the culture shift we were going through. As part of this shift, we really wanted to get the entire organization to be on board. Not just the SREs, not just the engineers who work on it. We wanted to get the designers and the editors and everything. So the design manager asked me and asked the leadership, how can they contribute? What can we do? We said, our error message looks terrible. Can you contribute and make it user-friendly, make it design? That's when they make it look prettier. I wouldn't come up with a design like this. There's always been a debate whether the panda dropped an ice cream and is sad, or it just threw up and that's why it's sad. So we haven't quite settled on what the actual design is. But the end result is that, you know, when the product is not working well, the panda shows up, sad panda. So we have this big mission within the organization to eliminate the instances in which we show a sad panda. That's the idea. Talking about error messages, one thing to really keep in mind is security is very important. While it's important to give information that's easy to debug, you don't want to add information that might disclose things. That's something to keep in mind, is a good balance and all that. I kind of hinted on the distributed tracing, which is really what gets you when a really large system, instead of having to go through individual things. So the system we have, you know, like obviously in the industry, Zipkin is a very popular one a lot of folks use. Internally, we have built this thing called Stamp Manager. It's literally on our hundreds of thousands of machines, you have this agent that's running, and whenever you have a trace ID like the one I showed you, you type it in, it'll go grab logs on demand from all these machines, and we'll be able to get that and being able to correlate and figure out what went wrong. For a complex system, you know, like in our case, it's Bing. I search for something simple. When you don't get the right results, it could be anything to do with the speller didn't work right, or the word breaker, or the location. Number of things could go wrong. So having a tracing system that goes through the entire stack really helps correlate that. The second system we have is called BPerf. That's like the performance profiler that we use. I have a link to the GitHub repo where you can take a look at this. This is another thing that we use on demand. This is a little bit more heavyweight, so we don't use it all the time when we need to. We can't easily debug or diagnose issues. We want to get some additional information. That's where we get information from BPerf and be able to get the info we need. One other concept I talk a lot about is designing your product for reproducibility. That's one thing that becomes a lot more important when you have a system that's not that uses complex AI and machine learning, which could take alternate path depending on the user and a lot of context. Some things that are pretty straightforward, I would say, that's been very useful for us is log playback, taking a bunch of logs, being able to play them back to reproduce the exact same chain of events that happened for the user, being able to fork part of your traffic to a separate set of machines to be able to mimic and figure out what things are going on. Experimentation is another way. Any given week, we run tens of thousands of experiments, A-B experiments for the users. Being able to narrow down what exactly went wrong for that experiment is something that's easy to go look into. The second part, there's a whole bunch of machine learning is this buzzword that's been going on for a few years. We started to look into this to see how it really can apply for us, especially when it comes to log analysis and going through these things. I've listed out few techniques that we use in our day-to-day use. These are pretty standard things. There's tons of open source libraries available for each one of these things. You can look them up. I have some links in the notes as well that I'll, when you get the deck on the site, you'll be able to use. One common one we look at is for an organization that's really large, when you have a lot of developers from different parts of the world that's with different set of experiences, it's not uniform. So we even have a classifier that just looks at phrases within the logs and being able to look for things that are more positive versus negative. This is the cases where people haven't standardized the log.error versus warning versus message. You can even work beyond different hybrid sets of logging that comes in. The other one is being able to take the logs and being able to extract and create tokens. So to be able to automatically detect key value pairs so you can take some insights out of this. Another technique we use often is clustering. In this case, the example I have on the screen is being able to develop a debug graph that tells you what went wrong. Again, I'll go with an example of Bing. My query that I was doing yesterday or a couple of days ago was weather in JB. JB being right next door, I wanted to go visit because I had half a day there. There are cases where you will see when you query the same query multiple times, you may not get consistent results. So in this case, we fed the clustering algorithm a complex set of pairs. It was able to diverge and look at each part of the stack where the differences are based on different clusters and being able to quickly identify where they are now. All the green path is the one we want to take in this graph. All the red paths are the ones where there is something went wrong that we can go look into. Anomaly detection is another technique that we've been using a lot in. Obviously, you can use out-of-the-box things that are available in Kibana that does provide you and also some open source libraries. The screenshot on the live on the left is from this tool that we use called Flycatcher. What this does is anytime there is error that's going on in production steady state, there's always like small number of errors, right? We pipe all those error logs into the system called Flycatcher that starts to go look at anomalies and also for clustering. In this case, across all the machines, we had one machine which had a higher number of failures that you can easily detect. We also can use the same thing for alerting and monitoring. In addition to having standard thresholds, you can also use an anomaly detection to be able to say, hey, compared to last week or compared to usual thing, you have 10% higher latency or 10% higher error rates. That's another thing that's going into things. To be able to find things immediately is super important. So one thing that we've spent a lot of time on is being able to do near real-time metrics. We use Kafka and Storm a lot for, especially for our getting our signals through quickly. Using this, we're able to compute complex metrics close to real time within like 2 to 3 minutes, and then being able to use that to detect where things are going wrong across the stack, and being able to correlate. That's something we've been using a lot of late. I have a couple of blog posts I've linked in the notes that you can look at where we talk about these, each one of these techniques and link to the tools later on. As I think of all these tools, various things I talked about, Snap Manager is a tool we built. We have the Storm and Kafka pipeline that gives you this system. For part of the stack, we also put the data in Elastic because it just makes it easier visualization through Kibana. That's something we look at for what if scenarios and things at steady state where you're not in an incident mode, but you're really exploring, that's where we look into these things. As we go through all this logging, being able to keep all the data and logging, One thing that's super important to always keep in mind is privacy. I didn't hear a lot about privacy so far in this conference today. Maybe there'll be more talks. Other people might mention privacy in the future. I'm not an expert in privacy, but I can tell you that as we were going through GDPR, we had to make a lot of changes, even to the way we log things, what we log, how much you retain, and all that. While it's very important to make sure that you can reproduce issues, being able to troubleshoot them, it's a good balance between how much is user, how much can be easily used to identify users, and keeping the privacy in mind. This becomes more critical as you start talking about crash dumps or being able to log other additional things as well. Closing thoughts-wise, you know, covered most of these things. Anomaly detection, I can't speak more highly on this. You know, this is something that's been extremely useful for us. Gone are the days when we used to spend on pre-configured threshold. Those used to be very problematic, especially on low-volume scenarios. Privacy, keep reminding, that's something that you have to keep in mind. And lastly, debugging is fun. Continue to have fun. That's something I enjoy about my job, is being able to debug. Looks like we have about 5 minutes, right, Matt? Yeah, 5 minutes or so. So we had a hack day project, as in the group, we do this on every quarterly basis, we do some hack days project. So I thought I'll share a video of this project that we recently worked on. This is not production quality, this is not in production, but just to give a sense of something that we did for fun. The way it works, HackDay, is we get like one full day. You're allowed to work only for a day on that outside of your work. And based on that, at the end of the day, you create videos. We let people judge. This project did not win the prize among the actual judges, but it won the popularity contest based on users. So it's rough setting some context. So let me see if the audio works this time.
This is a demo of the new Holo debugger, where we experiment with debugging live site production issues using the HoloLens. First thing that we can do is place some objects in our environment to help us with our DRI. So I'm going to place an alarm. So place alarm. This alarm, I just placed it on this chair, and it will go off when an alert fires to let me know about the alert, and I can go about my business. Run test. Oh, there we go, the alarm's going off. So I can go ahead and select the alarm. Oh, here it gives me details about the alert. It's a SEV3. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and accept it. All right, we just got an alert, SEV3 for an availability issue. So let's go ahead and try and browse through the data center. Place data center. Place data center.
It's a real demo.
All right, now I have a map of the data center. What we see here is that the blue line boxes are switches, and the gray boxes represent machines, so we can kind of see the network layout of the data center. Rotate right. Oops, we moved over here. Let's place them back over here. Okay, we can kind of rotate it around and look at it, but of course we want to see some data, so let's see if there's any misbalance of keys per second. Overlay keys per second. All right, it's going to go ahead and graph this for us so we can get a visual representation of how hot the different machines are. There's quite a big distribution, but it doesn't look like any particular machine is hot or not. Let's try and find out where the availability issue is. Overlay availability. Oh, look at that. We have a serious outlier. It's rendering it on fire because it's so hot. I wonder what might be causing that. Overlay latency. Overlay latency. Oh, look at that. It's by far the most latent machine, also on fire from being so hot. Let's go ahead and take a little better look at that machine. Stop. Stop. Clear overlay. All right, this is the guy, so let's go ahead and select him. Oh, you stay there. Oh, well, the graph is not working. We've got a little bit of a bug here. Let's go ahead and look at his details, though. Ah, I see. Yep. Smart alert error detected that there's issues on the, or the watchdog detected that there's smart errors on the K drive. That's probably what's going wrong. I think we need to probably just go ahead and repair this machine. Let's go ahead and open up the repairs menu. Let's just send it to RMA. I think we're going to need a new machine. Go ahead and do that. All right, that machine is totally you see it's now black. And our availability should now return better.
Yeah. Anyway, so I have a link to the YouTube video if you're interested in this. The main point was we wanted to have fun. This is not in production, so we just had people enjoy and see how they can use HoloLens. One of the things we were talking to our execs was that now everybody who's on call needs to get a HoloLens so that wherever we go, we have this thing. Wherever you walk around, we can get it. Because in the past, we used to get a laptop and phone, so that's the thing. To end, that's my contact info if you have any questions. I think we have a minute for questions.